Well, the Friends of Ski Mining History invite the public to come learn more about the founders of the Silver King Mine. In the studio with details, I have one of the organizers of the Friends group, Sally Elliott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is when and where?
This time, it's at the Sandy Auditorium at 5 o'clock, Monday, February 25th. And it should be a hoot. It's just for fun. I've written 11 scripts for people to read on the stage, and Ron Butkovich of Park City Museum has dressed up everybody and will be in period costume, and just everybody will tell the audience who they were, and we even have not only just committee members, but we also have a couple of descendants of the actual characters. Because most of the Silver King characters have kind of hung around Salt Lake City, and their roots are here. And
so who's going to be featured then in terms of the characters,
well,
as opposed to the players?
Tom Kearns will be played by Thomas Kearns McCarthy, and Jenny Judge Kearns will be Alicia O'Meara, who lives up in Weber Canyon. James Ivers will be played by his great-grandson, Mickey Gallivan. Bridget Welch Ivers will be Phyllis Robinson. Albion Emery will be Carl Lund. Susanna Bransford Emery Holmes Della Chingalachev will be Pat Pond. John Judge will be David Hitterly Smith. Mary Harney Judge will be Paige Anderson. David Keith will be Donald Roll. Mary Ferguson Keith will be Rosie Moore. W.V. Rice will be Robin Fillion. And of course, you know, we're all members of the museum, and the Friends of Mining History is an ad hoc committee of the museum.
Right. So is there a cost to Mondays?
No, it's free.
It's okay. Yeah. So why is this important to you, to keep Park City's mining history alive?
Well, it's just part of who we are. It's what makes Park City, Park City. We were a snowy, tiny mountain mining community, and we're not a very big town now, though, of course, we've grown. But it's a way of connecting people with the history of the community, and it's important to me. As an Army wife, before we moved to Park City, I always tried to connect with the history of the many, many towns we lived in. And it's just one of those things that makes community, community.
Yeah. The Planning Commission recently reviewed the agreement moving forward to fund the rehabilitation of our old historic mining structures. And really, that was one of the reasons that this group started, was as a way to raise money, because we didn't know about this other funding source. Does it that
it
make
was
your
the
group?
Only reason why we started.
So
to
does that
rehabilitate the mining structures. But if people don't understand why something's important, then they're not going to help fund it. We have wonderful public support. Park City has just stood to the plate and really come forward to help us, because it's important to our planners to preserve our history as well.
Yeah, but I guess since we've got this agreement, now that we know that we do have a funding source going forward, does that make your group obsolete?
No, absolutely not, because we still have probably about $600,000 or $700,000 to raise. We started out by identifying seven priorities at Park City Mountain, and of those, we have gotten to work on four of them. We finished the King Con counterweight. We finished, well, almost finished the Jupiter ore bin. We finished the California Comstock mine this summer. We're going to be tackling the Thanes conveyor, that big old conveyor belt that goes out to the pile of rock at the bottom of Thanes lift. But we still have to do the Silver King headframe building, which is in horrible shape. We have to do the Thanes conveyor headframe building, which is likely to fall down at any minute. We have to do the King Con ore bin. And then every time we fix something, something else falls apart. Because everything, you know, it's all 1890 stuff. We have to stand up the smokestack at the mill. The mill is not on Park City Mountain property, so we'll have to get permission to do that. and it was not one of our original priorities, but it looks really dangerous. We're also doing the two water tanks east of the Silver King mine headframe, and those are not on Park City Mountain project property, and they were not a part of the original. But fortunately, the city has helped us find a way to fund in perpetuity the Deer Valley mines.
Okay.
So that's good.
Yeah. All right. So again, Monday, come learn about a little bit more of Park City's history with some of the real-life descendants of the Silver King Mine. That's happening Monday, Jim Santee Auditorium at 5 o'clock.
Right. So our town has really gotten interested in lectures. There's one tonight about agriculture at 4 o'clock at the library. So we've got lots of lectures going on. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Sally. Now on 8:31, good morning. Well, for the last 6 months, the Park City School District has been meeting with its consultants and committee members to identify the community's priorities and vision of Park City School's future of learning. Next week, the public gets to weigh in on the conversation. In the studio with an update, I have Clio Rayner. She's an architect and planner with GSBS Architects. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So we've got two meetings next week. One we've got in town, the other at Ecker Hill, both what? 5 o'clock? What time are you talking about?
So the one at the high school is at 5 o'clock. The one at Ecker is actually at 6.
Okay. So what we've heard all along is that before we can talk about school start times, grade realignment, or the future of Treasure Mountain Junior High School, we have to know what our vision for learning is. The meetings next week, I think, are to talk about those specific issues that we've been told we need to wait on. So what have we missed here? I mean, I guess we've never heard what the future of learning is, but now we're jumping now to school facilities and start times and grade realignment.
So we're not really jumping to them. I'd say we're gathering information on all things right now, and that's sort of where we start. We start by taking in any information we can get from the community and from your teachers, from the administration, and anyone else, any other stakeholders, to try to determine what direction we want to go in. So we talk about the future of learning, and that's sort of the development of what's called an educational specification, which highlights the ideals of educational delivery. That's a document that we're working on at the same time as we're developing that master plan. And so as we develop the master plan, that takes that ideal and puts it into the context of Park City. And then we bring in all of the other topics that we're talking about in this next open house, along with those educational ideals, which are things like grade alignment and school location and those types of topics. So we're still in that information gathering stage, and we want to hear from the community how they feel about all of these things. And so that's why we're having the open houses.
Yeah, yeah. But when we talk about, I mean, a very successful school district, you mean with kids going to some of the best colleges in the country, what are we trying to achieve here? I mean, it seems like the traditional setting has worked well.
It absolutely has. You're an excellent school district, and this entire process is built on the foundation of academic excellence, which is something that the district has been supporting for a really long time. It's true that good education can happen anywhere, but that doesn't mean that it has to be hindered by facilities, and facilities can help to be a resource for good education. And so that's what we're really looking at. We're looking at what we can do to bring Park City School District's facilities to a point where they're actually enhancing the education for your students.
So what's the format of the meetings going to be?
So we're going to have different table topics, and people from the public can decide what topics they're the most interested in, go learn more about those topics, and weigh in. There'll be a little bit of presentation up front in the beginning just to bring everybody up to speed on where we are and introduce them to the concept of how they're going to interrelate with each other and with our consulting team members. There'll be members of the steering committee there to help as well. So we're hoping it'll be a really open conversation with friends and neighbors as well as with us to talk about all of these different things.
So you have identified 5 hot topics that will be presented at these table topics. So tell me what those hot topics are.
So the task force topics were identified from a list of hot topics that the community and the steering committee identified. And the ones that really directly affect the development of the master plan were pulled from that list. So those include class size and school size, school locations, grade alignment, the future use for Treasure Mountain Junior High, the Kearns campus, and transportation.
Okay. So those are kind of going to be divvied up then in terms of those different topics. So if somebody's more interested in the future of Treasure, that's where they would kind of head to.
Absolutely. So one thing to note, the Transportation Technical Committee is slightly different than these other task forces. They haven't actually met yet, so we may not have a topic directly related to transportation, but we invite the community to input into the other areas. We would imagine Kearns Campus would get some transportation information. So we still want to hear about that topic. There may not be a separate table for that one.
Okay. So in terms of, you know, you had mentioned what we're getting from the community, but, you know, I'm trying to think of when a public hearing like this has been held, and I don't recall one. I'm just wondering, is there a vault somewhere where all of the committee, I mean, that the school board put together different committees? Is there a vault where all of their discussions live somewhere that so people can find out? I mean, we get these weekly updates, you know, that are basically a quote and a graphic and a coming up kind of thing. Very, mm-hmm. very brief and not a whole lot to them.
Yeah.
So is there somewhere where the beef exists?
So the steering committee, which is a group of community members, all of their meetings are open to the public if public wants to listen to their conversations. And in addition to that, on the Future of Learning website, we're trying to keep updated information from each one of those meetings. Now, the steering committee, after we identified some of these topics, we realigned their direction to talk specifically about those things. So the individuals on those task forces came out of the steering committee and then were also pulled from the rest of the community as well, and pulled from teachers, pulled from administration to enhance the number of people that were focused on each of those topics. So we've expanded that community base a little bit in the actual committees and actual groups that are talking about those task forces, and then again expanding it out one more time and hopefully getting as much of the public in on these open houses so that we can really take the temperature the community and understand where everyone stands on these.
So would we be able to go back to that website and find a lot of that background information?
Yes.
Recordings of the meetings or?
I don't believe there have been recordings of the meetings recently. The first few did have some recordings, and there was, for example, recordings of the summit, which was the educational visioning piece, and I think the first couple steering committee meetings. But as the complexity has grown, there have been a lot of different rooms that people have been in, so it's been a little bit more complicated to actually video record those. But the minutes should be available so everyone sort of understands what the conversation entailed.
Yeah. So we've been through a master planning process already, and I'm sure you've reviewed some of those documents, and it happened within the last 5 years. Are there any bold proposals at this point that stakeholders are going to be considering?
So right now, we're still finalizing that information gathering. We don't have any positions or proposals at this time. There's no recommendations that have been made. Obviously, we want to respect the work that you've done in the past, and so we want to focus our attention on pulling in all of that past master plan information as well. But we also want to make sure that things haven't changed as the discussion has moved forward. And so that's why we're bringing all of that information into those task forces that we talked about. That's part of their research information that they're basing their discussions around. And so that information and this new discussion will be pulled together to try to really reflect what the community is talking about.
Lindsay Ferrari, with the you're working hand-in-hand with the communications firm, she had mentioned that the master plan is now in the phase where the trade-offs and compromises have to be decided upon. Can you expand on that at all?
So this is a very complex issue, and it pulls in so many different topics. What we've asked those task forces to do is identify criteria to evaluate master plan recommendations with. And because the reason that we did that is because there are differences in approaches from those different groups, as well as the level of complexity around those topics requires us to be able to evaluate what criteria we're meeting versus what criteria we're not. There are trade-offs. there's no perfect solution, and there are a lot of different ways to approach the answer to these questions. And so we want to be sure that we understand how the community is looking at that question, why they feel the way they do, and if we have to look at trade-offs, we understand what things are the priority for the community so that we can reflect in the recommendations of the master plan the highest level of alignment with the vision that this community has.
I'm guessing money is usually the biggest definer of decision.
It's definitely one that is coming up in some of those task forces, and it will be a part of that decision-making for sure. That as the master plan recommendations come out, that will always be a part of it.
Yeah. How much teacher input have you been able to collect? I mean, that's having teacher buy-in is critical in this.
So we've had four learning leader forums so far. Those are teacher groups with representation from the high school, the middle school, and the elementary schools, all coming together and talking about these bigger ideas of education. And so we have a final meeting with those teachers where we're going to be discussing what we've learned, touch base back with them on what we heard, make sure it does reflect what they want to do. And so that's the level of participation we've had so far. However, we wanted to reach out even more. So we're launching listening tours now, and there'll be a meeting at each school, and teachers, administration, parents, PTO, students, they're all invited to come to their school and talk to us about what they see for their school. And so those will be starting not next week, but after the open houses in the following couple of weeks.
Yeah, and certainly, as you know, I mean, Park City made up of, you know, about 70% of second homeowners paying the bulk of all school district funding here. Are they being invited to participate in any of this, or is this really just a full-time, year-round resident decision?
Absolutely. We want everyone to be a part of this decision because everyone is impacted by it. And so they're absolutely welcome, and we hope that they attend those open houses so that we get the full picture.
Yeah, but I mean, is there any way to reach out to them? I mean, lots of them just come and visit for a week or two a year.
So that's part of the reason we're happy to be with you today. We're hoping that reaching out through the Park Record and KPCW, as well as we're scheduling some meetings for specific outreach to those communities as well. And so in the upcoming days, the district will be sending out schedules for those types of meetings as well.
Finally, just wanted to mention, how close is the master plan to completion? Because you are up against some deadlines if, in fact, we decide that we need to build new facilities,
yeah,
or revamp some of them.
So the initial presentation of the draft to the board will be in April, and then May will be the final recommendation. So that's sort of the deadline that we're up against. And like I said, we're just trying to gather as much information as we can so that those recommendations are valid.
Okay. Clio Rayner, again, an architect and planner with GSBS Architects. Two meetings next week, first at Park City High School on Wednesday at 5 o'clock, the second at Ecker Hill Middle School on Thursday at 6 o'clock. Appreciate your coming in this morning. Well, one organization helping the Heber Valley tackle transportation challenges is the Mountain Lands Association of Governments, or MAG. The government organization is part of an interlocal agreement between Summit, Wasatch, and Utah counties. Joining us on the phone now is the director of the Metropolitan Planning Organization for MAG, Sean Seeger. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So there was an open house in Heber on Wednesday, and this was to get input on the proposed bypass. Did you get a little of everything?
Yeah, we had a really good turnout. I think we estimated 220 people showed up on a very cold winter night and came out and got educated about the different options that are being considered and gave us some great input about their thoughts, their ideas, their concerns, and things that they're interested in seeing more about.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with social media. I mean, many saying that it's just too late. I mean, this alignment here is just really in the wrong location, as we've kind of seen the Heber Valley build out. Is it too late to change? I mean, I know we've acquired a lot of right-of-way for this proposed byway.
That's right. Now, we think that we can still build something and are optimistic about helping Heber's Main Street. We have traffic counts on Heber Main Street at 30,000 annual average daily trips a day today. We're estimating that number go up to 40 to 50,000 trips a day in the year 2050. So the Department of Transportation, the Utah Department of Transportation, and the local government all feel like we need to build additional capacity in the area, as Wasatch County's population will go from 30,000 population today to 60,000 population in the year 2050. And of course, the entire state of Utah's population will double by then as well.
And there's also a lot of talk about, let's make Main Street the bypass and create a new town center somewhere else. I mean, is that too late for that as well?
Yeah, I would not recommend that approach for obvious reasons, meaning that there's a lot of investment that's taking place on Heber's Main Street. And I think the concept that Heber City's mayor, Mayor Potter, and the Wasatch County Council have embraced is making Heber's Main Street a destination Main Street, almost like how Park City's historic Main Street is a destination street in and of itself. So taking some of those through trips, the pass-through trips that are not stopping on the street, taking them off of Heber's Main Street, putting them onto a bypass road or a series of other roads, I think is the idea that the local government leaders want to pursue right now.
One common complaint, though, the rerouting of 189 into 1300 South and how that would cut through neighborhoods near Walmart. So any thoughts about realigning that?
Yes, we did hear quite a bit of concern about the from the residents near 1300 South. 1300 South would not cut through neighborhoods because this would be on the edge of a neighborhood, on the south edge of an existing neighborhood in the sewer farm area. There's actually a drainage canal that would separate the two activities. And so this would be new construction in a new field area. But the residents that back up against that are very concerned about the truck traffic, the general traffic that would be attracted to that new road. And so I understand their concerns. I think there's ways to, if this project moves forward, there's ways to mitigate the impacts of that traffic on that neighborhood with things like sound walls, berms, tree plantings, and other strategies.
Yeah, UDOT also plans to reroute a portion of 189 to give the airport more room, apparently. How come? There have been several expansions proposed for the airport, but they've all been turned down.
Yeah, I don't think the purpose of rerouting the road is to give the airport more room. I think the purpose of rerouting the alignment of 189 is to make it more of a straight through direction to US 40 on the north end. We do have an option to bring the bypass down Southfield Road, and that would keep 189 in the same location as it is today. So there's a couple options there that we still need to look at. One of them does take the road further away from the airport. That could benefit the airport in terms of their safety margins, but it would not do anything in terms of realigning airport improvements or anything that way.
The bypass, looking at some ways to raise the $4 million for the project's environmental impact study. Any update on that?
Just the fact that we're pursuing multiple ways to try to get that $4 million in place. The local governments have requested UDOT Region 3 to prioritize that request on their STIP workshop, and UDOT Region 3 has done that. And so now this project competes with all the other projects in the state for funding at the statewide level with UDOT. And then in addition to that, we have submitted a community impact board grant application, a CIB grant application that's in process right now as well.
So is this going to get built in my lifetime? Because you still have a bunch of property to a right-of-way to acquire, no?
Great question. I ask myself that question often, you know, how will this project progress? Proceed through time, and I think the idea is that we don't need to build anything today, but we sure it'd be great if we could get an alignment that we all agree upon so we can conduct corridor preservation so that when we do need to build something, we have a corridor that's been cleared environmentally, has been preserved by the local governments, and that's what Wasatch County and Heber City have been doing with their local corridor preservation fund. They purchased more than $3 million of right-of-way for the bypass. And it would be great if we could all agree upon where the bypass is going to be in the future.
All right. You're also involved in the discussion for a possible bus route between Park City and the Heber Valley. Can you tell us briefly what's happening here?
Yes, that's right. There's some interest from Wasatch County and from the Summit County area to understand what the transit connections might be in between Summit County and Wasatch County. In particular, Mayor Potter from Heber City, Mayor Johnson from Midway City have been in contact with Mayor Bierman in Park City, and they've had some initial discussions about studying the transit demand that might exist between those two. So we're trying to put some money together to see if we could understand that a little bit further. And then if that study shows a positive result, that there is enough transit demand between the two counties, then we maybe consider running a pilot program for 1 year to see what the transit ridership might be on a connection between Heber, Midway, and Park City.
Okay, so the timeline for the proposed study is to actually have something in place by next winter?
Yes. Well, something in place, you mean the study would be completed by next winter, and then we would consider whether or not we would have a pilot program going or not. So right now we think we have the money in place, and we think we can progress and conduct a study this summer. Results would be available this fall. Probably would not have any transit service next winter running, but maybe the winter after that.
Okay. Hey, Sean, I'm out of time. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Sean Seeger, again, is the director of the Metropolitan Planning Organization for the Mountainlands Association of Governments. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, both Park City and Summit County Libraries are now fine-free. In the studio with details, I have Park City Library Director Adrian Herrick-Wars. We're hoping to get Dan Compton from the Summit County Library System on the phone. But good morning to you, Adrian.
Good morning, Leslie. It's great to be here.
So as I recall, this was, I think, Dan, are you with us now?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Dan, as I recall, this was something that you had initiated, this fine-free. How come?
Well, it really has been a joint effort this whole time. We actually had Peter Bromberg from the Salt Lake City Library come last summer and talk to both libraries, and he presented a very compelling case to why they did it, and we had our boards there and listened, and we definitely bought into it and have been pursuing it this past year. But some of the main reasons are fines are one of the number one negative customer experiences in the library. And we also don't want to create barriers for people, especially children, to come to the library if they do have late fees. So that was two of the main reasons for the motivation behind this.
Okay. And I guess, Adrian, it was only going to work if both Park City and Summit County did this together?
Well, it was a lot more fun to do it together, that's for sure. I think that this trend, not only in Utah but across the nation, has been coming our way for a little while. And when the board started researching the results other libraries were having, it made sense for us to partner up and get this done as a team. It was great.
Okay. So how much were you collecting from fines, Adrian? Do you know all that?
We were collecting in our library about $6,000, and we were paying about $17,000 to do that in staff time. So we were losing money.
Okay. And Dan, for you, similar numbers?
Ours was about $11,000 in revenue, and we estimate we were spending over $20,000 to collect that.
Okay, and that just was staff time is what we're talking about, or I don't know, I guess paper and
Correct. Resources
too, sending out notices and, yeah.
Yep.
So if it's fine free now, I mean, that's in place, right?
Yes. Okay. It's in place in both libraries, and people have been giving us great comments about coming back to the library now that we're fine free, getting more engaged with their library, which is a community amenity. So we're so pleased that early on we're having such great results.
Okay, so it's if somebody has been holding on to a book, now would be a great time to return it. The fines are, you've wiped them all out from even 5 years ago or something.
Yeah. Right.
They're totally gone. And if you did, we do still charge for lost materials. So if you do have materials at home, you can bring those back and we will waive the fee for those and your account will be free and clear.
All right. People still have to pay again if the book is lost or if their dog chews it or they spill their coffee on it?
Absolutely. There's still accountability.
Yes.
You still need to bring the books back and also take very good care of them. So we are asking people to do that. And what we really found is that the reason people bring books back is because they know someone else might want it. And it's a shared resource. And so folks are coming in and they're bringing their books back. Most libraries who do this find that books come back even more on time than they did before fines, which is super counterintuitive.
Okay, because that's what I was going to say. If I've got a book on hold and I know that it's out there, somebody holding on to it till they finish it. You think it does come back quicker.
Yeah, we send friendly reminders and let people know, hey, someone else is waiting for this book. And most people are very conscientious. If they know that, they don't hold on to it. They bring it back. So most libraries, Salt Lake City Public, with Peter Bromberg being one of them, have found that people do get them back quickly.
Okay, what about the DVDs and the quick readers?
Mm-hmm. Same. No fines on those either.
So basically, it's not a quick reader anymore. If somebody can just hold
it
on
is.
To it.
So it's still, in our case, due in only a week. And once you get to a certain point, you can't take out any more books if you don't bring that back. Those are turning over very quickly.
Okay. And do you have the similar situation there, Dan, with the...
Yeah, we have like one day DVD, like new release Blu-ray rentals, and it's the same thing. We're not going to charge the fine anymore, but you're still expected to bring them back the next day.
Okay. Again, so if people have been hoarding on their books because they didn't want to pay the fines, now is a great time to bring it back. Do you expect to see some books that you haven't seen in a while?
Well, we have a really conscientious population. Most people got their books back anyway. But yeah, we do. And we are seeing people come in who said, I haven't been in a while. There's just kind of the stigma of coming in and having to face the librarian that's gone away. And we're having more positive conversations across the desk with staff and the public. It's been a really great experience.
Yeah, and how about for you, Dan, anecdotally?
That's what's so interesting about this is how many people I've talked to have told me, like right when I mentioned we were doing this, they have a story about how fines have kept them from going back to the library. And these are grown-ups. These are adults, and they are afraid of going back. And I just can't believe it. And so if we can remove this barrier for them and get them back in using this wonderful community resource, this is a win.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, either of you? Nope.
Just come on in. We'd love to see you.
Yeah, come on back. We want you back, and your accounts are clear. So come enjoy the library.
Okay. Dan Compton, Adrian Herrick-Wars, thanks for your time this morning. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.